The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Welcome back to another Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. We're in a somber mood this week on the Dynasty Fantasy Podcast, whatever you want to call it. It's me. It's Dylan. Dylan, I'm not going to hype you up this week, man, because we've lost so many good arms. So many good arms have hit the IL. It's the talk of the baseball and maybe the sporting world now that the NCAA men's and women's tournaments are over. Dylan, welcome to the show. How you doing, man? How many casualties have you had across your fantasy teams thus far?
Yeah, it's not great. It's not great. I don't want to give away the names, not that we don't know who they are, but Strider I have on a couple big money teams. I have Bieber on one of my dynasty teams. But, you know, everyone's been hit. Everyone's been hit hard. I don't have some of the, like Trevor Story, like some of the hitting guys that have been injured. But yeah, it's been a pretty crazy start to the season, it feels like. Maybe it's because of the eclipse.
Yeah. It's pushing up injuries. No, I mean, I think it's kind of funny. A year after the WBC that we've had all these injuries because, and this is way off topic. I'm shooting way out of left field here. I totally understand that, the listeners and Dylan. But we had a narrative last year coming into the season that we're going to be more injuries, yada, yada, yada. We got the WBC. We got the pitch clock. We had some injuries, right? We certainly had some injuries. We had some injuries at the WBC. Edwin Diaz, Mets fans screaming at the radio right now. I hear you. But Dylan, no WBC this year, man. And we've had an adjustment to the pitch clock, right? Most of these guys, almost all of them have pitched with it. Whether they came from college, whether they came from the minor leagues, whether they were in the majors last year, they've all used it. But we talk about the WBC, all the injuries. We're opening this year, and it seems like there's more injuries than ever, which I think has changed the conversation to sort of a much bigger conversation in the baseball world than just the gut reaction of blaming the WBC, blaming the pitch clocks, blaming this, blaming that. It's been a lot of good content that's come out about it. I don't know if you've dug into it at all, Darren. I think it's worth we have the discussion here. We can name the names. You've already sort of thrown a bunch of them out there. We know Gerrit Cole, Yuri Perez is having Tommy John surgery. So the hits have just continued to come for Framber Valdez the other night. I don't know if you've read anything. Eno had a nice article about it today on The Athletic. I don't know if you heard Justin Verlander's comments, I think from Sunday, that I thought were really poignant and insightful as somebody who's been around the game for a long period of time and seen sort of that precipice, that change. He was right there. I don't know if you've seen some of that stuff and sort of what your takeaways have been.
I did see the Eno article. I saw the Ben Lindbergh article in The Ringer, which was quite extensive too. That was good. I saw the Verlander comments as well. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if there is a solution. I think they're not going to cut velocity out of the game. I think by nature, you know, every pitcher is going to try to be as good as they can be, even if that means, you know, it hurts their body, I guess. I don't think there's an alternative, just sort of in this arms race, so to speak, no pun intended. I do think that teams are going to be focused on somehow trying to minimize injury. I don't know what that will mean. I don't know if it's hiring more like biomechanic experts, figuring out off-season training regimens or something. Like I think the fact that a lot of injuries happen in like April, May, like early in the season, March, April, and it kind of comes down. I think there's something there. I think that's a signal of something. I don't know what it is. I don't know if they ramp up too fast. I don't know if they don't. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the cold weather, but I think, you know, more resources should be allocated towards studying how to minimize injury. I don't know if it's like I've heard talk about focusing on like durability pitchers, minimizing the number of pitchers on your roster to so, you know, you're not just having them air out for one inning and then you're swapping out to a new one. You have to have someone who can, you know, sustain and have longevity on the mound. All those are interesting. I think those could happen. I just don't think they're going to somehow rule out velocity. And I don't know what the solution is.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's a much bigger problem than even just the major leagues. That's where we have the most data. And that's where the most focus is in terms of eyeballs and concern, etc. But I think this permeates throughout all levels of the game. I don't think this is exclusive to just the major leagues or just professional baseball. We see it at the amateur level in college. We see studs that have Tommy John surgery in their draft season. We saw Dylan Lesko be considered one of the best high school pitching prospects that we had seen in quite some time. And Lesko had Tommy John surgery in March, I believe, of his draft year. So, you know, it's common throughout all levels of the game, and it's happening to prospects that you've never heard of yet, right? There's guys having high school Tommy John surgeries that, you know, aren't ranked inside a perfect game's top 500 that could be viable prospects in 3-4 years down the road. So I think it's way bigger than just velocity. I think it's way bigger than the pitch clock. I think that we talk about biomechanics. I think there are a mechanical element to this that maybe isn't necessarily the magic bullet, but is a huge part of the solution here. And just in terms of how guys' arms move, the types of pitches they throw from certain arm slots and all that sort of stuff, just the same level of care that's been applied to the development of pitch shapes and pitch arsenals and refining those, I think sort of needs to be paid attention to in terms of what's viable long term and, you know, what's going to really drain your elbow. Because I do think that the value to a team is eventually going to hit a breaking point where it's like, we need some guys that throw 150 plus innings every year, you know. And that's not to say you're going to eliminate it. Like, I look at a guy like Gerrit Cole. Cole hasn't really dealt with that many arm injuries up until this point. What is he, 34 years old at this point? So there might be a wear and tear breaking point too, where I think Strider is much more indicative of some of the issues in the game. A guy that already had Tommy John surgery, remade his mechanics. There was always a lot of effort there. He's a smaller guy, built up his physique to a point, especially in terms of his legs and everything, that maybe is a little alien even for his body and his body's chemistry, right? We have the ability to push so much further than we ever did before in a way that we can tangibly measure. Like, just in terms of building your body, even beyond pitching and playing the game of baseball, just in terms of adding muscle in your diet and all these sort of things, we're way more refined than we were even were 20, 30 years ago. And I think that all plays a role into it, that we're maybe putting engines that are, you know, on these chassis that the chassis can't handle it. Eventually it's going to twist, you know, it's going to bend the frame because there's just way more horsepower coming out of it. And the other side of it, as you mentioned, how do you stop somebody from doing that, Dylan? You can't stop somebody from pushing to their limits in order to be their very best. That is the reason that they're a professional athlete and at the top of their game. It's the reason they become a Spencer Strider or, you know, whatever pitcher you want to mention at the top of the game. It's the reason you become a Yuri Perez in the major leagues as a teenager. But the downside of that is just, you know, it's fleeting. And I think the unfortunate side of it too, for a lot of folks, you're either a fan of a team, and a lot of the clamoring has been the fantasy world, because we do have an investment in these players, whether it's for a single season in a redraft league, where if you're on an NFBC and you're playing with sharks like Dylan, there's a lot of money invested in that. You know, that's a big hit. I took a big hit in my labor draft. I mean, heck, I spent $37 on Spencer Strider and built my entire strategy about getting Strider. And that was like the whole strategy I built. And now I'm kind of sitting here holding my hands, you know, looking at nothing and hoping that Christian Scott gets called up and takes baseball by storm for this, you know, 3-4 months. That's really my only hope. So I think there's a lot of feelings involved in this as well, just in terms of people have a bad taste in their mouth because they're losing some of their favorite players or guys they were hoping to be productive for them throughout the summer as they try to chase a championship in a fantasy league. I mean, let's not say that that's divorced from a lot of the emotion out there. I think that's what a lot of the emotion is out there, especially the folks that we're seeing on social media because of who we follow and the circles that we run in.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's definitely a great point. I mean, you're investing in quotes, thousands of dollars into these high stakes leagues. You pick a Spencer Strider. We took him second overall. And then the rest of your draft, like you said, kind of revolves around that. Because you have Strider, you know, you can wait on pitching. And so you hit hitting, and then you finally take a pitcher in the fifth round or whatever. And so you deliberately kind of went weaker pitching after Strider. And then now he's injured and you have to kind of clamor. Which is obviously different than like a major league team like the Rays, where, you know, they lose McClanahan and Springs and Rasmussen, and then they'll just find the next arms to come in. And it doesn't really seem to knock down their momentum. They're still chugging along. So yeah, I do think a lot of the discourse is, you know, we're seeing it in our little insular bubble on Twitter. I am, at least. It's easy to create a narrative. All sports content is narrative driven. And so when you have Gerrit Cole and Spencer Strider, who are like the number one, the only two pitchers who are picked in the first round type of thing, and they're both gone, it's an easy low-hanging fruit narrative to say, you know, like, let's wait on pitching, or we can't take pitching anymore. Everyone likes to take their victory laps as well. So yeah, I think we're all kind of feeding on each other. But I mean, there is, the data is showing more injuries than before. They've been steadily going up. Velocity has been going up. I know causation does not necessarily mean correlation, but, you know, they are seeing evidence that, you know, increased velocity obviously adds increased stress on the elbow and throughout the whole kinetic chain. So, yeah, I do think it's something that's always going to be part of the game. Injuries are always a part of sports as well. It's also part of the drama, the ups and downs of following your favorite team, following your favorite players. Just adds to the spice of it. So I guess the question is, what are we going to do about it? What are we going to do from a fantasy lens? How are we changing our strategy? Are you changing your strategy? Maybe I'm throwing you on the hot seat here, but are you going to do anything differently? Redraft or dynasty? Like, what are you going to do differently next year? If the season ended and then you're going to draft for next year, what would you do different, if anything?
I'm going to give myself a second here, Dylan, because we're going to take a quick break, and we come back, we'll answer that. What do you say?
Sounds good.
And we're back. Dylan, all right. I'm going to answer this question honestly. So you know that I was forged at Razzball, came up under Gray Albright. One of my tenets initially when it came to drafting was I did not typically go for first two round starters or expensive closers. I felt like the game shifted away from that in terms of if you were playing in certain formats, points leagues, head-to-head points leagues in particular, if you're playing in experts leagues, if you're playing in only leagues, I felt like you did need to sometimes spend or get aggressive on the top 5 to 6, 7 starters. A lot of my other drafts, I tend to stay away from starters in the first 2 to 3 rounds. A more standard draft, more standard 12 or 15 team roto league, I tend to feel like I do well buying a 4th or 5th round guy, maybe hitting it again in the 6th or 7th round, and then sort of backfilling in those like 10 to like 12, 13 round area. You can kind of get the right guys if you know your room you're drafting in, all that sort of thing. So I've adjusted my strategy, and I sort of feel like I will probably be a little bit more hesitant next year to take one of those big starters in the first round, if that even exists. I think there could be a big reaction here too, especially when we're talking about the top of the top getting injured. And then, you know, when you lose DeGrom, when, you know, Scherzer is more or less retiring, Verlander is more or less close to retirement, Kershaw is close to retirement, Bueller's never really come back to what, you know, Bueller was when he was sort of coming up and looked like the Dodgers ace. And then you use Strider, you lose Cole, all these sort of hits keep on coming. And I just feel like maybe the top end isn't as high end as it used to be, which, you know, I think if the room's going to adjust to it, I think there could be an overreaction potentially with pitching. And what would happen is you'll probably maybe see some guys that would have gone in the second round slip into the early third. It's going to depend on your room, you know, and I still try to never go into a fantasy draft season or say anything that's far reaching, broad brush type of stuff, because from league to league, the dynamic is different. Like, it's pitching is never not going to be valuable in my home league, which is a 12 team head to head points league with that keeps eight. It's just pitching is always going to be, you know, one of those things where I had Garrett Cole, you're going to take an injury with Garrett Cole. And then, you know, you got to hope I drafted Jared Jones. It's a shallow enough league that you're able to sort of replace it. But you also realize if you're going to trade for an ace, cause you want to win the league, you're going to have to get some ponies, you know, to trade up for a big horse. And I don't know. I kind of feel like it's inevitable. I won't go into labor next year and spend $37 on any starter. I'm much more likely to spend $37 on like a Ronald Acuña, you know, go that route and try to buy the 21, 20, 19, 18, $17 guys. And then there's another, you know, in some of those leagues like labor, there's another approach, the Doug Dennis approach, where you just spend all your money on hitters and closers and you don't draft any starters for more than like $12, you know? I think it depends. Like with an auction, I'm way less likely to spend the big dollars. I could see a second round scenario next year where there's a second round pitcher. Maybe Bobby Miller wins the Cy Young, right? We're throwing that out there. Bobby Miller wins the Cy Young. George Kirby wins the Cy Young, despite the bad start last time out. That happens, you know, those guys fall into the second round because they don't have the name value of a Cole or a Strider or whatever. Or even the return, you know, I could see myself late in the second round, maybe taking a shot on one of those guys. I think it's so hard right now because there's no the other guy to throw out there. There's no, oh, Cole's hurt, but there's Strider. There's no Strider's hurt, but there's Cole. There's none of that. Or DeGrom, you know, even if he comes back, I don't think anyone's going to project him to pitch the kind of innings that, you know, one of those guys you would have expected to pitch and have that sort of production, you know, coming off of an injury of his own.
Yeah, I think losing the top guys, the new top is kind of bunched up. Like, I think right now Steamer 600 or Steamer rest of season has, it's like Pablo Lopez is the number one pitcher. And Gossman's kind of the same, and Yamamoto is like right there, and Wheeler's right there. Like, they're all kind of one glob right at the top now. So yeah, there's not much distinction between like where Strider had like the huge drop off from him to the next one after Cole went down. So yeah, I do think you're right. It's definitely going to be market, not market as in the room, though that is also a consideration, but just how do the valuations look? Just start there and then see like, oh, okay, there's, you know, 10 guys that are all kind of interchangeable at the top. So I'm not going to pick the first of those 10. I'm going to wait and take, you know, the eighth or ninth because there's not much of a distinction. Just see where the valuations are as a start. I don't think I'm going to now say I'm not going to take pitching, even if the valuation shows that, you know, a pitcher should be taken 10th overall. I'm not going to say, well, forget it, I'm not doing that. Because I think a lot of people will be doing that. And so, you know, maybe that opens up opportunities. Just kind of, I like to try to zig or at least be aware of the potential to zig when everyone else is zagging, rather than follow the crowd. You also had a very good point about knowing your room, the league you're in, because like my home league, I can find pitching. And so I typically don't go for pitching there in a main event. It's like pitching always gets pushed up because pitching is so important in my dynasties. I believe so much in depth. And so a lot of my bench is pitching. And so all those things are affected in some way by, you know, if pitchers are getting injured more readily than before. But I have different strategies depending on the league and depending on the room and depending on the format. So yeah, I don't know how much it's going to change. I don't know how much you can change it. I kind of take that approach. Like when there's the change to the stolen base rules or whatever, it's like, I kind of just say, well, you know, it's going to affect everybody the same. You can't really pick and choose. It's going to, a rising tide lifts all boats. So I kind of think like a pitching injury epidemic is going to kind of affect all pitchers equally at some way. And so you can't, you know, pick and choose and find certain pitchers who may or may not be more injury prone, et cetera. I don't know if that, like, it's kind of not really going to change my strategy. One thing it will do when you talk about the Doug Dennis approach is like relievers, middle relievers and good closers are going to have more of an impact on mm-hmm. everyone's team just because they'll be making a larger proportion of innings than they did before because there aren't as many starters type of thing. And so I think we're going to see that you're going to see more relievers being taken, more middle relievers being taken. Because I think, you know, those who are trying to get ahead of like, what does this mean? Are going to start saying, oh, I'm going to take these guys who throw, you know, 100 innings, these relievers that throw 100 innings, like the Josh Haders used to do, Mason Miller may do, because they're going to be more valuable than in rosters where a lot of pitchers throw 200 or 180 innings if that doesn't happen anymore. So it's going to be interesting. The landscape changing is interesting. I mean, that's the whole fun of fantasy baseball too, just things constantly changing, constantly having to shift, and constantly having to adjust to new information.
Yeah. And, you know, as we've seen with Major League Baseball, it could potentially push some rule changes as well, which I think is the funniest. And we could see some fences get moved back, man. Like, I think that's a big part of it. JJ and I talked about that yesterday. There should be more ballparks that are like 440 to dead center, like almost all of them. And they should probably be like 385 to the power alleys. And you want to have like the old dimensions where it's like 325 down the line, 325, you know, but you're going to have to really sneak it down the line, be able to pull that off. But I think that would encourage more pitchers to pitch to contact because there would be more outs in the outfield on fly balls than what we see now. They kept moving the fences in, the offense kept going up, and, you know, now you have to strike guys out in order to get out. So I think that's changed everything so much. But you know what? This is sort of a good segue now. Things you've changed. How much did the pitching injuries impact the updated top 700, by the way, for all Baseball America subscribers or those who might be thinking about it? You're on the fence. Updated, first update of the season on April 9th. And there was a lot of movement within even the top like 50, you know, top 200. There was a lot of movement, a handful of guys that came in. A lot of guys that have popped early in the season, we reacted to that, or you reacted to that. You know, you were driving the bus on this one. So, Dylan, talk to me a little bit about how some of those injuries impacted the rankings and maybe a couple of guys you want to call out that moved up despite the injuries that are happening.
Yeah, I think the way we handled it before the season, I think we did it appropriately. It was like if someone had an injury – like Ronnie Mauricio, even if it's a season injury, season-ending injury, or, you know, Noel V. Marte suspension, that's half a season. You know, we were a bit judicious on how much we moved them. We didn't move them too much because we don't know how much they're going to contribute in 2024 anyway. A lot of their value is in the future. And so, you know, losing near-term playing time isn't going to affect them too much. And so we did that. But now that the season started and I'm seeing a lot of moves in my leagues being very, very near-term focused, very, very recency bias driven. The market has changed substantially, even though it's only been a week and a bit of the season. So injuries that affect players who you expected to have 2024 performance are really affecting their value, and they are really being downgraded. So I went in and with the fine tooth comb, as you know, going over rankings like this is a very arduous process. And we care very much to try to get it right, that, you know, it's constant iteration and reiteration, iteration and reiteration. And so I went in and tried to make the changes, and this is going to be a bit out of the box, but, you know, when I used to record music, the rule of thumb for things like adding reverb is to your vocals or to your guitar or whatever is you go to where you think the reverb is and then back it off, because when you listen to it again the next day or whatever, it's going to be way too much. So that's kind of what I did. I would take a like Yuri Perez or whatever, and it's like, yeah, you know what, based on how I'm hearing my league mates talk about them, etc., what the market seems to be, drop them say 100, and then it's like, you know what, that's too much. So I bring it back a bit to drop them about 75 points. So it was that kind of process. Sorry, a bit of a segue there. Of you make the drop, you make the rise, and then you kind of back off from where you thought, because it's better to err on the side of caution. And, you know, long-term value hasn't changed that much. Don't react too much to the recency. And yeah, the biggest guys, unfortunately, were the injured guys. They're the ones that dropped the most.
Yeah, you know, I think a player like Royce Lewis, who we were both really excited about, did a good job to reacting. We moved him down to 59, but I don't think it's overreacting. If he's back in a couple of months and, you know, is really productive in the second half of the season, that's still going to be a really valuable player on your roster, not only in terms of the contributions that you'll get this year, but also what the trade value probably will be. The trade deadline, if he's healthy and playing well, or even in the offseason. I think that's a huge component of Dynasty as well, is the shiny toy still kind of brings us back, right? Like, even if the guy is injured, Spencer Strider still has some value. And I wanted to ask you, we moved Strider down to 48. Let's say it's announced in 2 days, Dylan, that he had Tommy John surgery or is having Tommy John surgery. Would you move Strider down further? Because right now he is one spot ahead of Bobby Miller, for example.
I think I would, because I think I have him where he is just because there is a chance he could pitch for, say, half a season. And I also know that people who have him rostered right now are hoping for him to come back. And they don't want to, it's the risk aversion of trading him. And then he comes back and he's just as good as before. And so like, oh, I can't believe I did that. So they have, they've given him more value than he probably should have. And so as a result, I've kind of lifted him up where, from where he otherwise would be. So long story short, if he did get announced as having Tommy John, I would drop him because I have hedged. I haven't dropped him as much as I probably quote unquote should, based on, you know, the likely outcomes.
Yeah. And I know you moved down a couple of guys like Louis Robert Jr. Moved down. What's your concern level with Robert right now? Because I feel like he is a guy every single offseason that I kind of regret after the draft season's over, before the season starts, like, oh man, he could blow up and I wish I had more shares. And then we get like a month or so into the season, only a few weeks now, where I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. That's why I didn't want Louis Robert on my team. So you reacted a little bit there. How much of that was the injury? How much of that is just the volatility of the player at this point?
I think it's both. I think you said everything there. He's one of the younger players who can have power and speed and good batting average. He's always a sought after commodity, and then he almost always has some sort of issue, and then he misses a large part of the season, except for maybe last year. So I think there is that recency bias. We hear it, the confirmation bias too. Luis Robert is injured. Oh, Byron Buxton is injured. Oh, Royce Lewis is injured. It's always like that is the perception of that player now. So I know that like the market for him, if you have him and you're trying to trade him, is smaller. Because a lot of people are just like, I'm steering clear from that. I think the fact that it's a similar injury to what he had before, again, raises alarm bells too, that, you know, maybe this is going to be a chronic thing that happens again and again. So I tried to, you know, thread that needle of like not doing too much, not overreacting, and then also kind of trying to reflect the market that I'm seeing and I'm expecting to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I know one of our biggest movers was Jared Jones, and I don't think there's any denying at this point that if you're rostering Jared Jones, you're probably fighting off trade offers all over the place. And is, I would argue, with the lack of healthy quality young pitching, you roster Jones or Skeens. Those are two potential like pieces that, especially when Skeens is probably up in a couple of weeks, arguably one of the most valuable, most sought after sort of trade chips right now. And the thing with like Jones or Skeens is like somebody's going to approach you about a trade and they're going to think they're getting like good value, because they're not going to feel like they're going to have to really pay up for it at this point, because neither guy has shown that much as a professional. I don't know. I mean, I feel like the reaction there, we moved him up a ton of spots, is appropriate. He was moved way up our top 100 list for, you know, the real life side of things as well. And I think if you watch the first couple of starts, there could be some concerns with command, that sort of thing. And it's still the Pirates too. But this stuff is nasty. And I think just from an inning to strikeout ratio thing, which is huge in roto leagues, you're just getting so many Ks per inning pitch that it's so valuable, you know, and it's why we went after Strider in the first place. It was this kind of a profile. So, you know, I think that's appropriate, and how you sort of moved the board made a lot of sense as well. Are there any other big changes that you saw that you wanted to call out, or maybe there's something you want to follow up with there? Sorry.
Well, I think we have Jared Jones at like 114. And this is one of those things where it's like, if you tried to trade whoever's at like 110, 111 for him, you're going to get laughed out of the room. The perception of
what is Walker Jenkins. So you might actually be able to pull that one off. 111 is George Springer. You will get laughed out of the room for George Springer.
Like the people who have Jared Jones on their roster are not trading him. Like he's like a top 50 asset. So that's one of those things where I had to like roll back the reverb a bit in my analogy that I'm going to keep using for the rest of this podcast. Because I think, you know, you have to temper expectations slightly. It's only been a few starts. The stuff pluses off the charts. And yeah, maybe he can be the next Spencer Strider. But, you know, maybe he'll have like Hunter Green type things where he's like enigmatic and kind of frustrating. And it may take a couple years before he meets that. So that's where I had to roll it back. So don't take the number. I guess this is the caveat we always put with these rankings. Like, don't just look and say, oh, he's 114. So anyone below that, I should trade for him. And anyone above that, I shouldn't. Have to know your league, have to know the context. This is supposed to reflect, you know, market perception, expected performance. But you also have to, you know, juggle it with like, what is your league like? That's my caveat. But in terms of other big movers, I think what I did was, coming into the season, there are a number of guys who did really well last year, sort of unexpectedly. And then the question is that who they are now and they're going to continue into 2024? Or is there going to be some negative regression? Are they going to go back to career norms, et cetera? And then it seems so far, even though it's only been, you know, 10 or 11 games, that it looks like this is who they are. So like a Jake Berger or a Chaz McCormick, Michael Garcia, guys who were showing the flashes of promise in 2023, seem to be continuing it forward in 2024. And so therefore I moved them up to kind of where we were kind of hoping they may be, but you know, we kind of backed it off before the season because we weren't sure. There are a lot of, you know, wide variance in their outcomes.
Yeah. I think just kind of wrap this up kind of tight, cause I don't want to give away too much. I want you to go on and read the updated list. We spent some time on it, but this is something we're probably going to do, we'll say around once a month, just to make some adjustments. I don't know if there will necessarily be as many adjustments as you have at the early point of the season. I would say the next time we probably adjust this much, it wouldn't shock me if it's maybe not until like June or July. We'll see. But I think there was a lot to react to. And because there was this rash of injuries, and then you have to react to guys getting jobs, but not only getting jobs, but sort of finding their footing in terms of, all right, we have a good feel for where Jared Jones is going to be in the Pirates rotation. You know, we know that Jackson Merrill is, you know, going to be a major part of the Padres lineup day in, day out, you know, health permitting. So I think reacting to some of those things, and then there's probably some early season breakouts that, you know, we, Oliver Dunn, we haven't really even reacted to, right? And then in a few weeks, that will be the kind of stuff that we update. So this is a living document. You know, I wish we could update it every day and make the right adjustments each day, but that would just be way too much work and would probably lead to worse results, frankly. So I think Dylan here did a great job in terms of diving, going through it with a fine tooth comb, as you said, and making the adjustments that, you know, we needed to make. And I think the rankings are better for it, and it's a nice little roadmap for you if, you know, you're trying to see where you're at and what trades you could potentially make, what players to move up on. It was a good, timely piece. But Dylan, with that being said, anything else you want to say before we wrap this sucker up and send people on their merry way?
No, I guess, yeah, it's a living document, but since we're not updating it every day, like Jeff said, you know, don't hesitate to reach out to us in the comments or on Twitter, et cetera. If you have any questions or you know, trade ideas that you want to run by us, we're always here to interact and help. And yeah, RoboScout is going to be, I'm worrying it up. I'm starting to prime the pump. It's going to do its first couple up, first update very soon. And I look forward to writing those up for the rest of the season, where these guys who are popping up on the stat line.
I'm super excited about that one. That's the thing I'm most gassed up about, seeing some RoboScout in action, going there, maybe getting some data soon. We've got a lot more minor league data than we ever had available too. So that's been kind of fun to dive into, especially with all the guys that are in the Florida State League that are fun to follow. But get a little long in the tooth. I'm going to wrap this sucker up for Jeff, for Dylan. This has been the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast.
Cheers.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.